Well, the Brother in the Lord puts out a popular DVD that I branded an anti-Semitic hit piece. He's on the air with me today to talk these things through and see where we can find common ground in the Middle East.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we are going to have a very important broadcast on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday here in the Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us. 866-348-7884, the number to call. I'll be introducing my guest to you in a moment, but please be praying for me this Sunday. I'm scheduled to leave for Israel, be there a little over a week, doing some TV shoots with some colleagues from the States and Israel for the Day of Discovery TV broadcast on the Feast of Israel and on Messianic Prophecy, returning from there to do a Jewish outreach in Florida, and then straight from there back to our missions conference that begins the following week. So it's going to be a very intense time. And best of all, we plan to be broadcasting live from Jerusalem, at least 5 or 6 broadcasts. So yes, Joey, live all next week. That's the plan, and hopefully even Monday of the following week before we head back. 866-348-7884. Okay, let me give you the intro here. Some months back, I began to hear about a video, a DVD that was getting a lot of attention in Christian circles called With God on Our Side, and it was produced by a gentleman named Porter Speakman Jr., whom I had never met. I finally got the DVD and was really disturbed when I watched it. I was upset with it. I felt it was misleading. I felt it provoked hostility more than reconciliation. I even branded it an anti-Semitic hit piece and attempted on 2 different occasions to get Porter on the air with me. It was not something he was able to do at that point, but subsequently, in August, Porter and I, together with another colleague, Scott Volk, were able to have dinner together to share our areas of commonality more than our areas of difference. And I said, look, let's come on the air and let's talk about these issues as brothers in the Lord, not to try to play one-upmanship with each other or to find fault, but to honestly talk through differences and then to find the areas that as brothers in the Lord we have in common concerning the Jewish people and concerning the Palestinians, Arabs, Muslims, etc. If you have a question, if you'd like to weigh in, I'm devoting the great bulk of the time to Porter and our interview, but if you have a question, I will take some calls at 866-348-7884. Porter, thanks for joining me on the air today.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Brown. Good to be with you.
Well, great to have you. And let's just take a minute. Our first segment is short. It's just our way of introducing things. But let's just take a minute and let the listeners know your main intent for joining me on the air today, because we agreed we're not having a debate. We'll talk through issues, but tell me your heart, what you would like to accomplish in this hour together on the air.
Well, I think what's important, especially when you're looking at an issue as we are today, is that people actually talk about it and people get a greater understanding of what's actually happening in Israel and the Palestinian territories. Because I feel like for so long that this has been a subject that you're either not allowed to talk about, or is that as soon as that you do talk about it, then you're either branded one way or the other. And I think that within the church, as followers of Jesus, you know, it's very important for us to be able to talk through certain issues when our common goal is to see, you know, God's name made great among the nations, whether that be amongst the Jewish people or the Palestinians. And I think we can talk about some very difficult, hard issues in doing that. And I just think it's very important that we have these type of conversations.
All right, excellent. Well, that's what we're about to do. And when we come back, Porter, let's first start with your response to my charge that the DVD was an anti-Semitic hit piece. We'll start there. We'll talk about why you produced it. And then we'll move through some of our areas of differences to get to our areas of common ground. It's going to be an important broadcast, friends. Stay with us.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, in August, I was suffering from West Nile virus, so I was not completely myself, but I was myself enough to enjoy the steak at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, courtesy of Porter Speakman Jr., as he treated me and my colleague Scott Volk to dinner in Charlotte. I had suggested Bojangles, and he suggested Ruth's Chris. No, just joking with you. But when we met, number to call, 866-348-7884, if you have a question for me or my guest, Porter Speakman. When we met, I said, can we agree to speak honestly with each other without concern of offending the other? Because sometimes we can dance around issues and never really get to the real points. And if we're committed to the Lord, if Jesus comes first in our lives and we have profound differences or very different ways of seeing things, then honest, forthright communication is the most important. And Porter said absolutely, and he's not easily offended. I'm not easily offended. But in point of fact, we were gracious the whole time, speaking in a way that would be God-honoring. I believe if you listen to a private taping of the event, it wasn't taped, that you'd find that we were forthright and honoring of the Lord. So we're going to do the same thing here on the air. The goal is not to make one look bad and the other look good. The goal is honest communication, but primarily, after we discuss some differences, primarily to emphasize areas of commonality in terms of what our heart should be as believers towards those living in Israel and the greater Middle East. 866-348-7884. Porter, again, appreciate the Ruth's Chris steak. That was gracious of you. But it didn't change my
views. You're more than welcome. Next time, Bojangles.
Next time, yeah, it's my treat. but anyway, I know that you really took exception, not so much to my general differences with your DVD, which might be expected, but with me branding it anti-Semitic or an anti-Semitic hit piece. So I certainly wanted to give you the opportunity to respond to some of these things in the context of our dialogue today.
Well, good. And again, I want to thank you for having me on the air here to do just that. I think there are definitely differences, but I think the term anti-Semitic is just used too loosely these days. I think sometimes it could be a knee-jerk reaction because anti-Semitism is a very real thing. It exists in the world and has to be combated. Racism in any form is evil, and the church should stand up against it. But I think criticizing certain policies of a state, and talking in this, here about the geopolitical state of the state of Israel, to criticize certain policies that are having an effect on real people, including other members of the church, as being anti-Semitic, I didn't agree with that. And I think that we can criticize without it being racially motivated. Now, with that said, there is no doubt that certain policies, certain pro-Palestinian groups will use certain situations to do this, but it was never our intent. I don't believe that the term anti-Semitic, just because you're criticizing certain policies when it deals with Israel, I don't believe that stands up, because if you criticize other policies of any other state, it doesn't mean that you're racist toward that state. You're criticizing policies.
Right. And I appreciate you sharing that, because it does allow me to say, by all means, I speak critically in different ways about Israel today. I'll speak critically in terms of lack of moral values in much of the society, or lack of God-fearing aspects in much of the society, or how the ultra-religious are extremely hostile to the gospel. And I'll always say that to stand with Israel, for me, does not mean sanctioning everything they do. I use the term guardedly when I said anti-Semitic, because I felt that many parts of the DVD played into anti-Semitic stereotypes and fueled negative feelings about the Jews as a whole, or Israel representing the Jews, which is why I used it. But again, it's important to have this discussion and ask you this pointed question. And I was pleasantly surprised to hear your answer to this. And again, we do want to talk about the justice issues. We do want to talk about areas that we have in common. But to jump ahead, this is one area we have in common. Do you believe that God has ongoing purposes for the Jewish people and future promises that remain to the Jewish people, not just as individuals, but as a people.
Yes, I do. I believe that God has those promises. I believe God still has purposes for the Jewish people. With that said, in a broader context, however, I believe God has plans for all people. You know, God has purposes for all people. And he wants to see, you know, as I said before, his name made great among the nations. And so, you know, I, as we talked about at dinner, you know, I try to differentiate between talking about the Jewish people and the state of Israel. And I know for some people it's one and the same. But yes, that is one area that we do have in common. I do believe God still has plans for the Jewish people. We need to stand by the Jewish people. But we can never do that at the expense of another people. And when we do that, I believe we lose the gospel for both.
Right. All right. And of course, you understand my concern that after centuries of anti-Semitism in church history, after centuries of Jews associating the name of Jesus with crusades, inquisitions, even Holocaust, to find Christian Zionists, to find Christians who say, we love the Jewish people, we're standing with you, we're helping you resettle in the land, and even if we differ with you, even if we differ with your policies, even though you reject Jesus, we're standing with you and we love you, that I felt that that's such an important testimony of the gospel to Jewish people in undoing centuries of anti-Semitism, which I can say as a Jew. So does that resonate with you on any level, even though you take strong exception to what you would call Christian Zionism? Does that resonate with you in terms of Christians showing this genuine, heartfelt love and solidarity for Israel having a positive effect for the gospel?
Yes, but I'm going to separate it from Christian Zionism, because I don't necessarily believe that all aspects of Christian Zionism are very good for the Jewish people or supportive. And again, there's okay. many different aspects of that. But to go back to your question, yes, to you as a Jew, and yes, the church has committed horrific crimes against the Jewish people, you know, all the different things that you have mentioned, and that we do need to, you know, show the love of who the Messiah truly is versus who he has been portrayed to be by the church toward the Jewish people. Absolutely, there are sensitivities, and that we need to be aware of those, and we need to be aware of the history of anti-Semitism in the church. But with doing that, we cannot then be silent when we see injustices happening amongst other peoples in that area that maybe Israel are committing, and that we have to be able to stand up, you know, because for me, that is being a true friend of Israel. That is being a true friend to the Jewish people. It's saying, okay, what you're doing, this is not good for Israel. But yes, anti-Semitism is very real. I'm very aware of it. And as I said before, racism in any form against any people needs to be condemned and fought.
Yeah, and of course, I take strong exception to people referring to Christians standing with Israel as a form of racism. I take it as a matter of God's faithfulness. In other words, this has nothing to do with race. In fact, Jews have suffered more than anybody because of us being the chosen people. If you look at our population numbers compared to, say, India or China, nations as ancient as ours, they have over 1 billion people. We have, 13, 14 million. So I see the chosenness of Israel never having to do with our works, never having to do with racial superiority. In fact, we fail as much as anyone, sometimes more. Rather, excuse me, it's a matter of God's covenant faithfulness. So I'm only looking at it in terms of the faithfulness of God. But one thing we talked about over dinner, and I want to put this out early, and then we'll come back to it over the hour. I said to you, if you could say clearly, yes, I believe that God has brought the Jewish people back to the land. Yes, I believe they should have a homeland. Yes, I believe there's a future for Israel. However, I'm critical of various Israeli policies that I feel are hurting Palestinians and hurting in particular Palestinian Christians. Will you stand with me to address those issues? Then I would more readily be able to stand with you on behalf of our Palestinian Christian brothers and sisters and others who are suffering. But whereas I feel Israel is attacked and threatened as a whole, it's very difficult for me to then stand with you. So your thoughts on that? We've got about a minute before the break.
Sure. I would just say that I think, and this goes back a little bit to the title of our film, With God on Our Side. There are many times, you know, throughout church history, and as you've mentioned, the Jewish people felt this probably worse than anyone as a people group, that when people feel like God is on their side, atrocities happen. Everything can be justified. So the real question is, are we on God's side? So we want to stand with the Jewish people. We want to stand with the Palestinian people. We want to see God's purposes for all people fulfilled. But we can never do that at the expense of another people. And so if our theology, if our politics, our ideology, or whatever causes us take offense or to offend another people group, then, as I said again, then we've lost, you know, the gospel message, because God's for all people.
Got it.
And we should
stand
for everyone.
All right. Thank you for weighing in. And, of course, that's my great concern in terms of if someone's standing with the Palestinians, are they turning away Jewish people and turning a deaf ear to injustice against Israel? So these are the areas we'll continue to discuss. Stay patient on the phones. We'll get to you shortly.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
And I will get to some phone calls soon, so please be patient and we'll get you on the program, 866-348-7884. My guest, Porter Speakman Jr., I had twice previously invited him to join me on the air when I was going to be critiquing in very, very strong terms his DVD With God on Our Side. For different reasons, he was unable to join me at those times, but was very eager to come on to talk through our differences, not to debate them, but to share our different perspectives as brothers in the Lord, and then to affirm, agree on our areas of mutual concern, again, as brothers. So, Porter, I appreciate you being on the air with me. Some people may be surprised that you're on the air with me. Some people may be surprised that I have you on the air. So that's a good thing. We've got to talk these issues through. And would you say that you produced your DVD out of a loving burden as a Christian?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, why we produced the DVD, you know, with myself, is I saw a part of the story that wasn't being told in the Western Church, a story that I had never heard myself until my wife and I spent time over there, living there and meeting with Palestinians and seeing the situation for ourselves. So as we have always said, you know, our purpose with the DVD is not to tell in what we think is the whole story in 82 minutes. It's to produce or to show a piece of the puzzle within this discussion that's not being talked about, that's not being seen. And, you know, I know in the West, especially in the United States, with movies, we like to identify the problem, analyze the problem, solve the problem in 90 minutes, and then go on with our lives. But what we're trying to do here is saying, wait a minute, here's what a lot of people with groups that will actually come over and take time to spend with Palestinians, to go into the Palestinian areas, this is what they'll see. These are the stories that they're going to tell. And many groups go back saying, why was I never told this? And so that's what we were trying to do with the film, is to put another piece on the puzzle on the table and say, we all need to learn more.
Yeah, and I appreciate your motivation in doing it. I don't doubt that for a split second, that you felt a motivation as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, as one that cares about things based on compassion and justice. The issues I raised with you, of course, face-to-face as well as on the air, were I felt it was counterproductive to do something that would provoke such hostile, negative, stereotype feelings towards Israel, and then to try to aim for reconciliation and forgiveness at the end. I felt that the better way to start is even to take 2 or 3 minutes, give a historical context, show how Israel is birthed out of the ashes of the Holocaust, show some of the Islamic hostility towards Israel before the historic regathering, and then to talk about the very real threat to Israel's survival, to give a sympathetic tone with Israel, even scriptural promises about regathering, and then to say, but there's another side to the story. And I felt that many of the guests that you had on, the Stephen Sizers, with whom I take profound difference in terms of biblical interpretation and public statements, people like Norman Finkelstein, who represent the radical, radical fringe of anti-Israel scholarship, even though he's a Jew, that having those people on, and then people who use terms like ethnic cleansing and genocide when the Israeli Arabs have more liberties and freedoms than probably any Arabs anywhere in the world, And certainly there's no country with Muslim rule where the Jews have the liberties that the Israeli Arabs have. So I felt the way it was set up was so destructive, negative, detrimental, and one-sided that it was very difficult for me to take away the positive, which is there are Palestinians, especially Palestinian Christians, undergoing hardship because of Israeli policies. What can be done about this? So your response to my perspective.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. I think, first of all, I think what's unique to this situation and talking about these issues is that, you know, for some reason, many times that the Palestinian story and the Palestinian struggle somewhat need to be qualified by what have happened with the Jewish people, which is very real. And so there always seems to be this qualifier that we have to first explain everything that happened with the Jewish people, with the Israeli people. Then we can talk about the Palestinian suffering. And I don't believe that, you know, that that's a healthy approach to the situation. But two, it's, you know, we get to this whole concept of balance. You know, that the only time, you know, many times that I'll hear in this, if you present the Palestinian story, there's you always, you know, you share their story many times, and you hear that, well, that's not balanced. You have to have it qualified by the Israeli perspective or Israeli historical events. And I think the reason why we did it the way we did, as I said, we wanted to put another piece of the puzzle on the table, and we do want to see reconciliation. We want to see Jews and Palestinians living side by side in peace and getting to know each other as families and, you know, living life. But we first have to understand, why do we need that reconciliation? So if we start with the need for reconciliation, and then, you know, people are going to ask, well, why? What's going on? And so we're telling part of the story with this, and I don't believe that it needs to be qualified, because I believe that the plight of the Palestinians, and there's many different things we can talk about that, you know, it's not just all Israel's fault, it's not just all Arab nations' fault, there's a lot of things going on in there. But the simple fact is that real people are suffering, and that I think their story can be told, and that we don't have to qualify it before we can tell that story.
Right. Well, I appreciate your perspective. I wanted to give you the opportunity to share that. And I'm going to make the last comment simply because we have a hard break that we're coming up to. But when we come back, we'll talk about your perspective, having lived in Israel and having lived in what's called the occupied territory. So, Port, I'm going to come back to you to respond. I'm not setting this up as a broadcaster to get the last word in and not allowing you a response, okay? So just want to prepare you for that, all right, so you don't think you're being set up in any way. My response to Porter is simply that you have to give the context, because we see the way Israeli Arabs are treated and the liberties that they have, and they may not have perfect equality on every level, but they're in the Knesset. There's an Israeli Arab who's on the Supreme Court, and they've thrived and grown. Their numbers have probably grown by 400% under Israeli rule. And yet, the reason that there's a wall or a security fence up, the reason that Israel has to send all their kids, every man and woman, every boy and girl has to serve in the military, with rare exception, the reason for this is because Israel's surrounded by hostile neighbors. And radical Islam must be taken in context. If not for that, Israel would not spend all it does on defense. And I have plenty of Messianic Jewish friends in the land that work as much as they can with Palestinians. And what their perception is that the big issue is radical Islam. It's not Israeli-Arab relationships, it's radical Islam. So I believe we have to give the context, otherwise it gives a misleading picture. So we'll get Porter's response to that. I have a two-hour DVD. It's a lecture I did at University of South Florida. Is Israel an Evil Occupier? And I want to get that to you today, along with this interview with Porter, so you're getting to hear his perspectives. It's not all me. $15 postage paid. That's dirt cheap. It's an important resource. 2 hours plus Q&A included in that at the University of South Florida earlier this year. Call or order 1-800-278-9978. That's the DVD plus today's interview with Porter Speakman Jr. 1-800-278-9978. And let's pray for God's best for every human being whom he loves living in the Middle East.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thank you for joining us today on the Line of Fire. My special guest, Porter Speakman Jr., I'm so glad that he was willing and very eager to join me on the air. We have some profound differences over a DVD that he produced called With God on Our Side. But beyond those profound differences, there are more things that unite us in Jesus and even in our concern for God's best and God's loving purposes for every human being, Jew, Arab, Palestinian, Muslim, Druze, whoever, living in the Middle East, living in Israel and the surrounding lands. So we are talking candidly about differences. What's the use of discussing things if we can't be candid? At the same time, especially in this half hour, I want us to begin to focus on areas of commonality that we have. And Porter, I just want our listeners to know, because we've been very candid with each other on the air here, and neither one backing down from convictions very deep to us. But your posture in emailing me before our dinner and my posture in emailing you was, let's learn from each other. And I appreciate your heart. That remains my heart. So I want to underscore that. I mean, obviously, we're both being true to our convictions, so we're not backing down from certain fundamental things. But it's done in a certain spirit that I believe is important for other believers to hear. So let's start there, and then you can tell me how living in Israel and living in what's called occupied territories or West Bank or Gaza shaped some of your thinking as well.
Great, and I want to thank you again, Dr. Brown, for having me on the air and for the opportunity to be able to share some of my perspectives. And to just go back just before the break, you know, some of the things that you mentioned, and I agree, context is very, very important, and that's why, as I said at the beginning of the program, and I'll continue to say that we all need to learn more about what's actually happening over there. And that's one of the reasons why we produced this film, and we produced it the way that we did. It's because I didn't feel like many Christians here in the Western church, especially in the evangelical church, that we were getting that context. And so adding this piece of the puzzle helps us to be able to get that context for that. But my perspectives, my wife and I, we had the opportunity to spend about 5 years living in Jerusalem, in the Jerusalem area, 2.5 years in the Old City, and then about 3 years in the West Bank, just outside of Jerusalem. And it was during 1998 from about 2003, and so it's end of the Oslo times and right at the beginning and the height of the Second Intifada. And so when I first went to Israel, when we first went there, you know, I had heard all the stereotypes of who Palestinians are, the good guys, bad guys, terrorism, radical Islam, everything like that. But nothing could be farther from the truth than my on-the-ground experience actually spending time with Palestinians, you know, with my Muslim and Palestinian Christian friends, being brought into their families, being made to be feel part of the community. And so my stereotypes of who Palestinians were as people was crushed, and rightfully so. And then, you know, when the Second Intifada began, you know, and the wall started to go up, and we were under curfew for 3 or 4 days a week in the village that we were living in, you know, and seeing a lot of things and experiencing a lot of things that we did on the ground, and then coming back to the United States, and even before that, seeing many people within the church justifying theologically and politically what was happening, there was a disconnect, because that wasn't, for me, consistent with the teachings of Jesus and how we were supposed to treat our neighbor, our enemies. So I began to ask just a lot of questions. How are we supposed to approach not just the Israeli-Palestinian conflict as a broad subject, but the people on the ground? How are we, as followers of Jesus, supposed to be his ambassadors there without taking their sides?
Right. Well, articulate, and Porter, you actually end it with perfect timing as well. You should consider a career in radio. All right, we'll be back, and here's what we'll take your calls, and then we'll talk about, okay, what's God's heart? How should we be involved in this very volatile situation?
Fire we want, for fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest today, Porter Speakman Jr., who has produced the video With God on Our Side. And let me just give you a quick update. I have not retracted, stepped back from a single criticism I have brought against the DVD, and Porter has not stopped distributing it. So our differences remain as deep and clear as could be on this. Our commitment as brothers in Jesus to talk through the differences and try to find God's heart for everyone involved in the Middle East conflict are far deeper than the differences we have. Would you agree with that statement, Porter?
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's why I think, as I said before, it's so important that we're able to talk about these issues very clearly, very directly, knowing that our common goals are very much the same.
Great. All right. I want to make sure that I'm not putting words in your mouth or misrepresenting. And we will, before the show's out, have two or three or four statements, I believe, that we can agree on that we'll put forward. I want to get to a few calls that I think will raise some relevant issues for us. Let's start with Stacy in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for patiently holding. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. Yes, I go to an evangelical church here in Charlotte, and I'm very aware of the With God on Our Side film and Porter Jr. and the people that were involved in making the film. And again, I feel the same way as you, Dr. Brown. I love Porter Jr., and I love the community of believers in the land, but I'm in Jewish ministry, meaning that I promote in the church the history of what has happened to the Jews and the ramification from not understanding the history, the ramification of not understanding Scripture regarding God's covenant with Abraham and the land, and also the fact that we're in a day where God is raising up the church to evangelize the Jews. And I just really want Porter to understand that, you know, the biggest thing that we're neglecting here is that this film does hurt evangelism back to Israel. It takes people that you consider to be Zionist or labeled Zionist and didn't just look at them as following commissions of Romans 11 that says, you know, that we're supposed to provoke the Jew back to jealousy. And, you know, using somebody like John Hagee as the pro-Israel example, when, you know, those of us in the Jewish movement do believe that he is dual covenant, his goal is not to share the gospel, he is distorted and imbalanced in certain areas of his perspective of Israel. It really hurts. It takes people that might have read scriptures literally and said, you know, I'm going to stand with Israel even in their unbelief, and it puts them into a neutral stand or a negative stand.
All right, your response to that. Thank you, Stacy, for weighing in. Your thoughts, Porter.
Yeah, well, thank you, Stacy, for your call. And definitely, you know, we want to see, I want to see the Jewish people come into full revelation of who the Messiah is, and we don't want to hurt those efforts. Just a few quick points to some of the things you said that, you know, but at the same time, in our love for the Jewish people, we can't neglect the Palestinians because we want to see the Palestinians also come to the full revelation of who Jesus is as the Messiah, as their savior. And many times when in taking a very pro-Israeli stance toward the state of Israel, we're only looking at their interests. Many times that does the same things that you're talking about towards the Palestinians. And so that's why I'm advocating that we all need to learn more. We need to see the bigger context. And so the film that we produce is trying to put that context that many people aren't talking about. And then, you know, you referenced John Hagee, you know, as the representative. When we did the film, you know, we looked at, you know, Christians United for Israel and the Christian Embassy in Jerusalem. It wasn't because of who they were necessarily. It was their influence. Christians United for Israel is the largest pro-Israel group actually in the world, not just Christian Zionists. And so we went to them and we just asked, what do they believe? And I actually do believe that, although, you know, not point by point on many things, but that they do advocate the general stance of most Christian Zionists, you know, and how we are supposed to support Israel. So with all that said, though, and that's why I just say it's important that we talk about these things directly, we talk about them openly, but we want to see what's best for all people. And when we take the side of one and not the other, then we lose the gospel for both.
Right, got it. Stacy, thank you for the call. By the way, with regard to Pastor John Hagee, I've had grave concerns about dual covenant teaching from him or others within Christians United for Israel. He told me face-to-face that Jews need Jesus to be saved and that he would preach the same gospel to Jews as to Gentiles, and was emphatic on that, so I have to take him at his word. However, there are public statements that have been made or put in writing by Pastor Hagee and others within Kufi that have raised these concerns, rightly so. Stacy, thank you for the call. So, Porter, just to take one more step in this direction, I so agree with what you're saying in terms of the overall heart and approach. And listen, I'm a Jewish follower of Jesus. So I have often warned my Christian friends about a sentimentalizing view of Israel. I mean, I've been a critic for years over these issues. And you go to Israel and you pray at the wall and you get baptized in the Jordan, you come back with the holy oil. And I say, is your heart breaking because the people are lost without Jesus? And do you know that in the army, every Israeli woman gets 2 free abortions paid by the government? And are you aware that Tel Aviv has been voted far and away the most gay-friendly city in the world, and et cetera? So in other words, don't have this glorified, sentimentalizing view of Israel. But the point you made about we can't just present one side, that's again what raised my concern with your video, that I felt it was so one-sided that it undid a perceived injustice on one side with now what I felt was an injustice on the other side. So again, I want to give you the opportunity to respond to that criticism.
Well, again, as I said before, you know, I think that you are able to present certain arguments and you're able to present certain perspectives, especially when they're not being heard in the general context of what we're talking about, without having to always qualify everything. And so, like, well, as I said, what we did with an 82-minute film, we said, hey, wait a minute, you know, we need to consider these type of things. The same criticisms can be laid against many books from those, and sorry to use broad brush statements like Christian Zionists, but you know, those, you know, pro-Israeli or Christian Zionist books normally will not present the counter-argument that we're being asked to present all the time when we present the Palestinian perspective. And so I think, you know, what we all need to learn is I can't read one book. I can't watch one movie and say, oh, I got it. You know, and I think that any book and any film can be used by anyone for their own purposes, or their own motivations, whatever that may be. You know, we can't prevent that, but what we can do is we can continue to advocate. We all need to learn more. We need to see the region. We need to see the people of the region as God sees them. And we need to, as we're doing today, we need to ask questions, and rather than just, you know, go at one another without talking. We need to talk to one another, not over one another.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I guess my perspective, right, where I differ with you, honestly, is that whether it's the teacher part of me, the professor part, the debater part, but I always want to qualify so that what I present is fully accurate and truthful. You know, I don't want anyone to be able to dismiss what I'm saying because of an inaccuracy or historical misrepresentation. So even if I'm giving the other side plainly, I'll try to say, no, I'm not saying this, this, or this, which is why I'll constantly call Christians to stand with Israel and say that does not mean endorsing everything Israel does. That does not mean thinking that Israel is righteous and everyone else is wicked. But let's go back to something else, and I want to make sure you get this out. You felt there was a caricature of the Palestinians. I guess that they were all dancing on the rooftops as Israelis were being killed, that your average Palestinian, either Muslim or Christian, is thrilled when Jewish blood is shed, that they hear about a 3-year-old Jewish kid slaughtered by a terrorist, and they're all celebrating, and that they're kind of inhuman when it's their own kids being blown up as suicide bombers, that they're just happy over it, that they don't feel pain. You felt that that was a caricature. So take a minute to describe what you saw and why you feel that that was a caricature.
Well, I think it is a caricature of, you know, many times, not just with Palestinians, but the Arab world that we may have today. But, you know, going back to to specifics, and I think it was a radio program that I was listening, your radio program, you know, and it was talking a little bit about, you know, that, you know, Israelis are sending their kids to the army, and they're dying, and it came across that, you know, Israelis celebrate life, Palestinians, in a way, celebrate a culture of death. And it was referenced to throwing candy, I guess, at the 9/11 terrorist bombings, mm-hmm. you know, and the celebration of the martyrs. And, you know, for me, in my experience with the Palestinians, there's nothing farther from the truth.
All right, let's stop right there, and then you can finish that thought. We come back. I'll start with you finishing your thought about, is there a celebration of a culture of death among the Palestinians?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire today. If you missed any of the program, I'll tell you in a moment how you can get the CD of this interview. And all of our callers on hold, I've only taken one call so far, so as to give maximum time to Porter. But I'm going to continue to take calls on related issues, not to talk without Porter, not to talk behind his back, but simply to answer questions from my perspective, if you want to stay on the line. So if we don't get your call this hour, please stay on the line. Just a quick shout out to a colleague in Charlotte. Hopefully, David, we'll get to your call. But a man who has a heart for the unity of the body, thrilled to see Porter and I having dialogue here on the air, 866-348-7884. So, Porter, right before the break, you're talking about your years of living in Palestinian communities, both Christian and Muslim. And perhaps during some of those times, I don't know if it corresponded to the terrorist attacks in Spain, Al-Qaeda attacks there, and the Al-Qaeda leaders said to the Spanish people, you love life, we love death. And certainly we see the suicide bombers. I just visited the memorial for 9/11 in New York City with my wife Nancy, whose brother was killed by Al-Qaeda terrorists. One of my spiritual sons earlier this year, a missionary, was killed by Al-Qaeda terrorists in, I can't mention the country, but in the Middle East. So all that to say, you know a picture of fundamentalist or radical Islam, which is out there and certainly represents probably several hundred million Muslims worldwide. You're saying on the ground where you lived, that was not what you saw.
No, not at all. And I think this is one of the major obstacles that there is to reconciliation and to actually understanding one another, being Christians and Muslims and even Jews, is that we demonize what we do not know and or what we fear. And so, like with our experience with the Palestinians, for example, on 9/11, my wife and I were living in the West Bank during 9/11, and you know, you turn on the news and you see, yes, you know, Palestinians or a few Palestinians throwing candy in the streets. But what you don't see is the numerous phone calls that we got from friends in our community, our house full of Palestinian friends, you know, in tears, you know, sending their condolences, asking if we had family members involved. You don't see, you know, when terrorist attacks happen, you know, a Palestinian mother loves their children just as much as a Christian or a Jewish mother does. They feel the same pain that we do. And so they have this, and they have the same caricatures of us, you know, they don't know who we are. And so that's why I think dehumanization is not only a major obstacle to reconciliation, but it's a blind spot that we have, because we want to demonize the other. And many times that we want to do that because we want to justify ourselves and what we're doing. So that's why it's so important that we, as followers of Jesus, we see the people of that region, whether it be Jew or Arab, as God sees them, and not necessarily as the media wants us to see them.
Got it. And I certainly agree that we need to go beyond caricatures that we can all have, and that I'm always sensitive to the fact that we can play into. And the only way to get by those is being prayerful, to ask God for his heart, and then investigating. And then ultimately the best is to sit with people, from as wide a spectrum as possible. All right, we just have a few
can
short
minutes.
Can I
just say one more thing just real quick?
Yeah, please.
All that to say, not to say that there aren't radical and extremists on all sides. Yes, there are radical extremist Muslims who want to kill. But, you know, extremists exist on all sides, and that's why we can't allow them to dictate our approach to the region, because there are people on all sides who want to see more than that.
Yeah, and of course, just to jump in, and then I want to get to a few statements of affirmation quickly. When I look at Hamas ruling Gaza, and I look at the persecutions of Christians in Gaza, I'm not blaming that on Israel. I'm blaming that on Hamas and saying that you have radical Islam that's often in leadership, and even many aspects of the Palestinian Authority would be anything but moderate. So I want to, for conscience sake, make sure I say that. But let's see if we can just agree on, we're real short on time, but I want to do this judiciously. Number one, can you affirm that American Christians need to get to know their born-again Palestinian brothers and sisters and value them as key parts of the church?
Absolutely, and I would say that for anyone around the world. We need to connect with the body of Christ worldwide.
Oh, okay, and do you believe, so I affirm that. I also affirm that it's important that we hear their story because of what can be a one-sided standing with Israel. Obviously, you agree with that.
Yes.
Okay, do you agree that the Jewish people should have a homeland now in the Middle East, even if we don't agree necessarily on borders?
Absolutely. I believe that Israel has a right to exist with safe and secure internationally recognized borders. Absolutely.
All right. And you do believe that God has preserved the Jewish people to this day? And as you said at the beginning of the show, that, well, we'll be specific, Romans 11:26, all Israel shall be saved, is still a future prophecy regarding Jewish people.
I do, and I hope to see that all people, Jews, everyone, comes to the saving knowledge of Jesus Christ as their Messiah.
All right, and you don't necessarily agree with all the theologies of all the people that you quoted, even on your side of this issue, then, on that video?
Not necessarily, not for everything going. I don't necessarily agree with everybody on everything. I'm a constant learner, and I think we all should be constant learners. But I think the most important thing is that we don't adhere and just hold on to our certain theologies, but that we see how we can be great ambassadors for Jesus Christ in the Middle East.
All right, and we need to remove whatever barriers stand in that way. So on the one hand, you're sensitive to removing the barriers that stand in the way of Jewish evangelism. You want the church to be aware of the barriers that stand in the way of reaching Palestinians with the gospel and affirming our brothers and sisters who are there, as often ones who are forgotten in the conflict. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes, I'd agree with that.
All right, so friends, we're out of time, but if you have With God on Our Side, obviously I'm not selling that today, we joked about that, but if you have it, view it in the context of what Porter shared. Put that context first, and then see if there are areas that God wants to touch in your heart towards the Palestinian people. View it in that context, and those that really like the video, view it in the context of, hey, there are two big sides to this story. Hey, Porter, thanks so much for being with us, and I hope you feel you were treated fairly today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Dr. Brown, for having me here to share our perspectives, and I really appreciate that.
All right. Hopefully we can continue the dialogue. All right, friends, I'm going to continue to take calls into the next hour, so stay with us, and I'm going to be joined by my colleague Scott Volk with an amazing story. Here's what you do. Get my DVD. Is Israel an Evil Occupier? You'll find it tremendously eye-opening, historical and contemporary. Plus, I take questions from the audience. Two-hour DVD plus the CD of the show you just heard with Porter Speakman. Just $15 postage paid. If you can help with an extra gift, please do, or become a monthly supporter. But call right now, 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. 9978. My bottom line, let us go back to Joshua, the fifth chapter, and not ask God, whose side are you on? But let us be determined to be on God's side and have God's heart for all of his people and for his purposes in the Middle East. My guest today on The Line of Fire, a Jewish believer in Jesus married to an Arab believer in Jesus. You've got to hear his story.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just had an important hour on the air with a gentleman named Porter Speakman, who put out a DVD with which I took profound exception on Israel in the Middle East and the conflict with Palestinians. And as we have met face-to-face recently and agreed that it would be good to come on the air together and discuss our differences, but with the goal of being to emphasize our areas of commonality, there was a colleague of mine who was instrumental in getting us together because somehow we had missed each other in the past. And Scott Volk has been a friend for almost 20 years now, and he's kind of everybody's best friend when they get to know Scott. He's got a real heart of joining people together and reconciliation. Scott's Jewish, his mom and dad Jewish, always been Jewish, and is married to a woman of Lebanese descent, so Arab, she's always been Arab. In the last few years, God did something supernatural in Scott's heart. He's here in the studio with me. We work in the same building, same ministry, Fire. He's pastored our congregation for years, just down the hallway from me. But we haven't done an interview to talk about what God's done in his life, his calling. And on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, we're going to do it now. A bunch of you have been holding for a long time from the last hour. I want to get to your Israel-related questions very shortly, too. The number to call, 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. Now, Porter is not here to answer questions, so this is not a time to bash Porter or his position in his absence, but we will continue to discuss issues that came up. But first, let me introduce Scott Volk to you. Hey, Scott, great to have you on The Line of Fire today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a joy to be here.
Now Scott, your mom and dad, Jews, got saved when you were young. You then relocated to live communally with a ministry led by a Jewish man based in Minnesota. You were in recent years leading tours to Israel, and yet you didn't really have the Israel-Jewish burden until recently. What happened?
Well, not only did I not have it, I probably despised it, because what I saw in people who had that, my perspective was that Jewish burden people were mostly Gentile people who looked like they wanted to be Jewish. The Messianic congregation that I was affiliated with had 95% Gentiles, and they were actually more Jewish than the Jewish believers that were there, or at least they were acting more Jewish. So I actually had an aversion to Jewish ministry, and in a crazy series of events, I was flying home on a flight from Israel. I lead tours every year to Israel. This was a tour I was returning from. I was sitting by myself and by my window seat, and I felt like God himself was sitting next to me pointing a finger saying, "You're a Jew. And I've called you to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Never could I have been more surprised in my life. And my whole life was turned really upside down, or maybe right side up at that point. And a burden that I never had or thought I wanted all of a sudden became mine. And I've been living with that ever since in quite a remarkable way. Still really, really thanking God for the amazing almost conversion that I had.
And just in 30 seconds, do you feel it's significant that that Beth, your wife, is full-blooded Arab, and the two of you, Jew and Arab, joined together in one?
Yeah, it's quite a remarkable joining. I didn't think 25 years ago when we got married that I'd ever have a ministry of reconciliation, but the fact that my wife is Arab, that I'm Jew, that my kids that live in my house have both Ishmael and Isaac inside of them, I really believe that God wants to use that as a testimony to our people and the Arab people who are in the land, and really believing and trusting God to open doors to see reconciliation, really the one new man coming to fruition.
All right, and that's how you got with Porter Speakman, and that's how we ended up having dinner together. All right, we come back, Livingston John, Rudy, Jared, we want to get to your calls, and then I want to talk through these issues with Scott. Why should we care? Why should the church care? Why does this matter? Why now is God burdening him with this Jewish calling? Stay with us.
The world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and tomorrow, after the broadcast, I head over, God willing, to Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary, teach a second-year class in Hebrew exegesis of poetry, wisdom, literature. Do it again Saturday all day, and then Sunday head to Israel, where, God willing, beginning Monday of next week, we'll be coming away live from Jerusalem. Wow. It should be just like we're next door to you in our high-quality studio. We're traveling with our portable radio equipment. They've got a business lounge private for me to use each night. Should be a special time out during the day in Israel, reporting at night. So please join me for a special series of broadcasts beginning this Monday, and pray for health and strength and vigor on the trip. 866-348-7884 with your questions, your comments, your concerns, your differences. My guest, Scott Volk, not just a longtime colleague and one of my closest friends in the world, but also a fellow laborer together with me in Jewish ministry. Scott, before we start to take some calls, I never caught this, but you used to introduce yourself, if it was in a Jewish context, and say, my parents are Jewish, or I'm of Jewish descent. Why did you do that?
I guess for me, I never wanted to differentiate between Jew and Gentile. Sometimes I think people get the impression that if you say I'm a Jewish believer, that somehow holds some superior kind of sense that people are going to get, as almost as if you're bragging, I'm a Jewish believer. And so I so wanted to avoid that I just swung to the other end of the pendulum. And I even remember telling some people that I converted to Christianity.
In fact, you did that while sharing your testimony in a Messianic Jewish congregation.
Yeah, I learned never to do that again.
All right, so do you have some sentimental, affectionate kind of enamoring view of the Jews?
No, I don't, and I don't necessarily believe that God does either. I mean, Jewish people, according to the word, we're a stiff-necked people. We're blinded to the gospel because of our rejection of Jesus. So there's really not that affection. However, I must say that since the Lord touched my heart on the plane that day, I am struck with what I really feel is a burden that I can't shake, that has nothing to do with simply a soulish kind of thing, but just an authentic, deep sense of Israel needs to be saved.
Yeah, and the reason I raise that is to point this out as a burden, that this is not something that's just sentimental or some glorified view of Jews as if we're the sin-free people, or just, you know, you're in the land and right, kind of the spell comes on you. You'd been leading tourists to Israel before the burden really hit.
Mm-hmm.
And do you feel this is just for you or something that you're called to bring to the church as well?
Well, for whatever reason, this burden didn't hit me until I was 45 years old. Interestingly, coming at the same time as the birth of a child that I wasn't expecting either. After 14 years of having no children with my oldest daughter, the age 20, God gives us in our later years a daughter. And I really see that has really come in conjunction with this call, this birthing that the Lord has in my heart. No, I don't believe that it's just for me. I do believe that it's for the church. And for whatever reason, the Lord allowed me to live in church life all these years without this burden. I really feel like now I need to devote the rest of my life, and that my destiny in God is that I need to be a proclaimer of His heart for Israel.
All right, so we're going to talk about that more, what you feel the church needs to know, how the burden the Lord gave you is not just for you. And of course, as a close friend of Scott and Beth and his family, We witnessed this whole thing. My wife Nancy and I witnessed it, and remember the call. You had to talk about something important with Beth is pregnant and it's unexpected, and your youngest kid 14, oldest 20, so you had four kids and moving on with the season of life, and here comes a baby. And it was all, of course, the baby is the baby. Olivia amazes all of us, you guys most of all, but there was also a prophetic timing in terms of something new being birthed in your life. Let's grab a few calls. Livingston in Reno, Nevada, thanks for holding for a full hour. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you very much, sir. I'd love to support another reunion of you guys getting together with your families for steak dinner. However, I wanted to make sure that you would include another aspect of your discussions on this.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. It seems to me the scriptures are very clear that in Luke and in Matthew and the Gospels and in Hebrews, there's a connection to the blood of Jesus shed on the cross and Abel, who also blood was shed by his brother in a field. It seems like Abel was sent out of his field, but not after he had been circumcised or given a mark, which was a blood, something to do with blood. And now all the people today of the New Testament are told that you need to have the sprinkling of the blood of a righteous man named Jesus. Why are we spending so much time over the field of Abel or the field where Jesus was crucified, which was probably Roman territory, when we are so late in the game here in the last days, and it looks as though God cursed the field where the righteous blood was shed, but he doesn't curse the people. He didn't even curse Cain. He gave him a mark, actually. He probably went out and established the first Jerusalem. Now we have the end of
All right, so just to be clear, so your question is,
My question is, why are we spending so much time over the land, whether it's Palestinian land or Jewish land or Roman land? I mean, Jerusalem is a stumbling block to all the nations of the last days. Why not just concentrate on the blood of Jesus as to the sprinkling to get them saved, regardless of where they live in this world?
Right. Very fair question and an important question. Let me say I don't see these things in competition with each other. I simply recognize that Jews need a place to live and that God has given promises, for example, Psalm 105, that the land is their possession for 1,000 generations, that Jesus spoke about Jerusalem in Luke, about Jerusalem being trodden down by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled, that Acts 3, Peter spoke about the restoration of all things that the prophets spoke of, which included a restoration to the land. So I simply am watching what God is doing, not fighting over territory or borders, but watching what God is doing as part of his larger plan. For example, Ezekiel 36 says that when he brings his people back to the land, my people Israel, he's bringing us back in unbelief, and there in the land, he'll sprinkle clean water upon us. You mentioned Jerusalem being a stumbling block to all peoples, for example, Zechariah, the 12th chapter, but it's in that context that there is a worldwide attack on Israel and God delivering Israel. And in that context, Zechariah 12:10, they'll look on me whom they have pierced. So I see this as God acting in the earth. That's the first thing that gets my attention. It's physical in the earth as opposed to where is God and what's he doing. And then secondly, as Jews have come back to the land, more and more of them are coming to faith in the land. They're now probably... There are scores and scores of Messianic Jewish congregations in Israel. They're ultra-Orthodox Jews. It's a small trickle, but they're coming to faith in Israel. So back in the land, clean water is being sprinkled. And it could be even possible to say that as Jerusalem came into Jewish hands in 1967, that was part of when the Jesus People movement began. And there was a tremendous harvest of Jewish souls from the late 60s into the early 70s, myself being one of them. So I would say that what's happening in the physical realm is of great importance to what is happening in the spiritual realm as well. Anything you want to add to that, Scott?
Well, I would just like to say this, that as a father now with a three-year-old daughter, when I say something to my daughter, she believes that it's actually going to come to pass. Daddy, you told me we will go to the park. I think that this is something that really speaks of the covenant-keeping promises of God, that when God says something, we as his children can really rest in the fact that it's going to come to pass. The land of Israel, belonging to the Jewish people, is a covenantal issue that when God gives his word, you can take it to the bank. God keeps his covenant to 1,000 generations. So the fact that God spoke it, yes, we're all sprinkled with the blood. Yes, there's neither Jew nor Greek in Christ. I totally and completely believe that. But there is a specific promise that God gave Therefore, we can rejoice in God. And when we, as his children, are still hanging on to his promises, we have hope that God will, in fact, bring those things that he's promised to pass.
All right. So this, again, indicates God acting in history and God acting in front of our eyes. Mm-hmm. And that's why there's so much controversy over it. Again, it doesn't mean that we endorse every single thing that Israel does, or that every Palestinian is some evil, hell-bound terrorist, but it's to say that we recognize this is a regathering that God's doing. Friends, if he scattered, and he said, you're going to be scattered under my judgment, and then there's a regathering, who did it? You can't regather yourself if God has scattered you. You can't bless yourself if God has cursed you. So the regathering, we recognize, is the hand of God at work, which gives us great hope.
Amen.
For spiritual restoration as well. All right, stay with us. Back to your calls and my guest, Scott Volk.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Michael Brown with my special guest, colleague, and friend, Scott Volk. 866-348-7884 on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. If you missed the first hour, I interviewed Porter Speakman, who put out the DVD With God on Our Side, a DVD with which I took profound exception and had deep differences. So we've met over dinner, we've corresponded by email, and agreed it would be good to come on the air and share our areas of common concern and affirmation, as well as discuss our differences. I'll tell you in a little while how you can get the CD of The Last Hour. 866-348-7884. Scott, you've worked now a lot in the land, meaning the land of Israel, with Jewish believers there. What have you found is their attitude towards, quote, the Palestinians? I mean, some dispute whether that's an accurate term to use at all, but that's how they self-identify. So the Palestinians, obviously you haven't worked with everyone, but you've worked with a good number of Jewish believers. What's their attitude? Is it a lot of hostility, animosity? Is their heart to reconcile? Does it matter if they're believers or not among the Palestinians? What have you run into?
To my surprise, I've run into people who were desirous of seeing and helping the Palestinians. And an Orthodox Jewish community in Efrat, and just hearing reports of how their heart reaches out to the unsaved Palestinian community. Of course, unsaved. These are unsaved Jews, Orthodox Jews, who are looking for ways to build bridges. So the thing that I've noticed when I was over there is not only a realization that, yes, there is a problem and there is an issue because the Palestinian people can be mistreated. Their desire as believers, and when I say mistreated, I'm not talking politically. They're in a tough situation over there in the so-called occupied territories. But the believers that I run into are always looking for ways to not only build bridges, but to help, to support, to give money, to give food, to open up opportunities of serving together. I have been wonderfully blessed by the believing Jewish community over there.
All right, glad to hear it. I mean, I've run into the same thing. This is not to say this is universal throughout Israel or all Israelis, but I've run into the same thing, a heart to reconcile, especially work among the believers. And to me, what I've seen consistently, the big issue is Islam, especially radical Islam, and the desire to wipe out the Jewish people that creates the great tensions historically and to this day. Back to the phones. Rudy in Houston, Texas, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, I really appreciate you, Mr. Michael Brown, having Porter Speakman on. I think we need to hear more about this issue because I go to a Christian Zionist Pentecostal church, and we're pretty much pro-Israel. And the issue with me is that very much Christians who support Israel polity, I think we are complicit in the ongoing conflict in the place, because there seems to be an obsession that it's egging on or helping the fulfillment of biblical prophecy to bring on the return of Christ. And I see this as not being correct. I think that the main problem would be our the theological view or our eschatology that is misinforming us.
Right. So, Rudy, just to make sure everyone understands what your point was, the concern you have is that a lot of Christians, especially those who are into a certain end time system where maybe the church gets raptured out and then you have the tribulation in Israel and then Jesus returns with the church and establishes his kingdom, that a lot of Zionist Christians or pro-Israel Christians are looking to Israel mainly as some kind of prophetic timepiece and then just thinking, okay, if we can see XYZ happen, then Jesus is going to come back. And you have a problem with that. Is it because it strikes you as superficial that you're no longer looking at the people as people and just looking at Israel as some kind of time clock? Does it strike you as problematic because you differ with that end time scenario? I think it's a valid criticism.
Well, you know, for most of my Christian life, I have been pro-Israel too, but I got to see the other side or alternative other theological points of view that are more balanced. For example, in theological point of view, that is on most evangelicals that come out on television or radio, believe that the Jewish people must reclaim all of the land for Jesus to return to the earth. And I got to see another alternative or another theological view that it sounds more or seems to be more sound-minded because I don't think God is pro-Israel or pro-Palestinian. I think God is pro-peace. And I don't think God is pro-Jew or I think he's pro-justice. And
now, let me ask you a question, though. And I agree with the statements you made, and I do not personally believe that the Bible says that the Jews have to fully reclaim all promised borders before Jesus returns. In fact, I have Messianic Jewish friends of mine that say that'll never happen because that will only happen when Israel's righteous, and Israel won't be righteous until he embraces the Messiah, at which point he will be here with us. But I believe that the issue is that God has made promises. So it has nothing to do with being pro-Jew or pro-Palestinian. It has to do with being pro-God, that he's made promises that he will keep, and he has promised a certain piece of land to a certain people, not because of our goodness, but because of his promises. And that's why Paul reminds us in Romans 11 that even if the Jewish people for now, writing to Gentiles in Romans 11, might be enemies for the gospel's sake, that they are still loved because of the Father's sake, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And the gifts and calling of God, Romans 11:29, are irrevocable. So that's the issue to me. In other words, seeing the faithfulness and promises of God. And I believe we can be pro-justice and pro-prophecy and pro-God at the same time. But Rudy, these are important discussions to have because you are right. Many people do make these political leaps or these political assumptions that can go beyond Scripture and ultimately get us off course with a gospel emphasis. Thanks for weighing in and for the conversation. I appreciate it. All right. Well, I was giving Rudy the opportunity to say goodbye. Maybe he didn't realize that. So hence we had a moment of broadcasting silence. Hey, Scott, do you think, we've just got 30 seconds, that there are Christians in America who are getting a wrong idea of Israel as if Israel is some evil occupier in the Middle East?
I think that they certainly can, depending on which news station they watch or which videos they watch. I think if we stick to the Bible, even just with regard to the last caller, there's no terminology in the Bible that says pro-Israel. That's not even a biblical term. Unfortunately, we've polarized ourselves into thinking that if you're pro-Israel, that you can't love the Palestinian people, or if you're pro-Palestinian, that you have to be anti-Semitic. I really believe that this is, as you said, it's a God issue, it's a covenant issue. If we start using biblical language and recapturing how God feels and how God loves and supports his people, both Israel as well as the Palestinian people, we're on an entirely different conversation.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to continue this conversation with Scott. We'll take your calls, 866-34-TRUTH. And when we come back, I want to tell you about how you can get the entire interview I just had earlier today with Porter Speakman, together with my very important DVD, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? So stay with me. I'll be right back and tell you how to get those resources.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, which first prompts me to ask for prayer. As in the midst of a very busy schedule and getting over a cold, I traveled to Israel on Sunday, and we should be broadcasting, God willing, live from Jerusalem all of next week and even into the beginning of the next week. I'm traveling to Israel with Day of Discovery. We'll be doing TV shoots together with Avner Bosky, a leader living in Israel, Messianic Jewish believer in Israel for many years, and Professor Michael Radelnik from Moody Bible Institute doing shooting on location, talking about Messianic prophecy, talking about the Feast of Israel. And because it's Jerusalem, I might even have some guests like Moses or Elijah the prophet. Well, at least someone that thinks they're Moses or Elijah the prophet. You run into them everywhere. All right. They're only Christians that get a little disoriented. 866-348-7884, 866-34-TRUTH. I'm joined in studio by a close friend and ministry colleague for many years now, Scott Volk. Even though Scott is Jewish, even though his mom and dad are Jewish, even though he's always been conscious of the fact that he's a Jew, he was turned off often by Jewish fixation of congregations where Gentiles were trying to dress up as if they were Jews, or Jewish believers acted as if they were somehow superior to others, because of which he got a bit turned off to Jewish ministry emphasis. Stood with me for years in the midst of it, but didn't have a burden himself until a few years ago. And Scott, the burden that's on your heart now is a little different than mine in terms of you're not called, say, to debate rabbis or necessarily be putting out tools for Jewish evangelism. You have a great heart for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. You have a great heart for reconciliation in the land between Jew and Arab. You're married to an Arab. You have a great heart to see Jewish believers strengthened in the land. What would be your message to the church in America, if you could condense the heart of it into a couple of minutes? What's your message now as a Jewish follower of Jesus to the church in America?
Well, if I, as a 45-year-old Jew, could have been so ignorant myself with regard to God's purposes and God's heart towards Israel, I would then ask the question, how much more those of non-Jewish upbringing, how much more would there be an ignorance or a lack of understanding with regard to God's heart towards the Jewish people? I would hope that wouldn't be the case. I would hope that churches are preaching God's purposes for Israel. But by and large, even we in our own home congregation here, all the years that we've been together, there have been a very minimal number of Israel-related messages preached. So if we could be in the midst, if I could be in the midst of being so ignorant, my heart then is, now that God's enlightened me and given me a passion and a burden for this message, my heart would be to just share that very thing with churches.
And what's that very thing? What does the church need to know about Israel? Why does it matter?
Well, it matters because I think, first of all, Israel isn't on most people's grid. And the very reason why there's a Gentile church, it's to provoke Israel to jealousy. We're not called just to have church so that we can have programs and build our churches and be written up as successful churches because we've grown. We're called to be the church to provoke Israel to jealousy. That's the mandate. And if that's missing, then church isn't even living up to what it's called and destined to be.
And you're saying this as a man really called to be a pastor and as the lead pastor at Fire Church for many years now. And now God's releasing you from those responsibilities to focus more on the Israel calling. But as a pastor, you can say to other pastors that their churches should be provoking Israel to jealousy?
Well, they have to be. I mean, it was totally and completely absent from my understanding. But look, if Jesus can't return until Israel welcomes him back, and Israel can't welcome him back until there's a fullness that comes to the Gentile church, we, as the Gentile church, by and large, ought to be saying, okay, what do we have to do to provoke Israel to jealousy? Because I don't think it's a threat to the enemy that our churches are growing. I think it's a threat to the enemy when we grab hold of the fact that God has purposes for Israel.
Someone said revival is not our churches being filled with people, but the people in our churches being filled with God. All right, Tony, want to get your call on the way back. Others, the number to call, 866-348-7884.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I want to tell you a quick story, then we'll go to the phones, 866-348-7884 on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with my guest, Jewish believing friend, Scott Volk. Okay, Scott, we had on the air some years ago, I had a colleague of mine from Israel, Ron Cantor, spiritual son and now a co-worker, colleague. He was on the air with me, and I think he was in the studio here. He was on the air with me, and I said, all right, anyone can call with any question, and we'll tackle your toughest questions. Now Ron's great on a host of things. He's not into all the apologetic stuff that I was, so he was going to defer some stuff to me. But we agreed just to have some fun that Scott was going to call in and try to stump Ron with a Jewish question, just for fun. We're all buddies. So in those days, our call screeners were not at the same expert level that our call screeners are today. I'm being dead serious. And one didn't spell that well. It was in the earlier days. And I find out there's a guy named Rashid on the air. Well, Rashid, if anything, is going to be an Arab name, not or a Muslim name, not a Jewish name. And Scott was calling. He was saying Rashi. Rashi was the foremost biblical and Talmudic commentator, lived from 1040 to 1105. So the revered leader of Jewish commentary writing 1,000 years ago, still revered by Jews today. And Scott was saying Rashi, and the call screener was saying it's Rashid. And I'm writing the guy saying, are you sure? Are you sure? He goes, yeah, I just went back on. That's what he said. And then Scott comes on. It's supposed to be Rashi, who's Jewish, but instead you had like an Indian accent or something, whatever it was. It's like Rashid with an Indian accent for my guest, Ron Cantor. But that was not the first thing you've been involved with like that.
No. But I've grown up since then, Dr. Brown.
With a big smile. Right. I believe that. All right. I want to go to the phones, but after this call, I want to ask you a question about the fact you're married to an Arab woman, Lebanese descent, whose parents and family are not necessarily Zionist, we might say. What has happened in your own life through this and what you feel the Lord might be saying through it? But first, Tony in Marietta, Georgia, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
How are you doing, Dr. Brown? What a pleasure. I was not quite with a basic question, but now I feel like I'm compelled to do something else. So I'll stick with what I told your screener. Have you ever heard of the book Jesus Was a Jew?
The only book, I've got a ton of books with similar titles, but the one with that specific title was written by Arnold Fruchtenbaum. Is that the one you're talking about, Jesus Was a Jew?
Yes. I love that book. I'm just curious, what's your take on it?
Oh, Arnold's great. Arnold is as good as anyone in terms of being a teacher about, excuse me, I was watching Scott trying to suppress a cough there, and suddenly I had to suppress a cough. It's spreading through our studio here, so sorry, Tony. But Arnold is a thorough biblical teacher. We have some differences on a few aspects of things, you know, charismatic aspects and dispensationalism and things. But I would absolutely recommend Arnold's book, Jesus Was a Jew, where he gives Jewish background to who Jesus is, where he gives interesting rabbinic passages and things like that, points to the Hebrew scriptures being fulfilled in the life of the Messiah. So, yeah, it's a great book to read. Obviously, if folks read my book, The Real Kosher Jesus, they'll get a lot of related information. But sure, Arnold's a sound, excellent teacher in these areas, and I think the book came out just within the last couple of years, actually.
Okay, one more thing. I want to add to a question I think you were alluding to about what the churches are teaching. I belong to a big mega church in Woodstock, Georgia. I won't mention the name.
Okay.
But I belong to a Bible class where the men are all in their 60s and 70s. I'm 50. And I spent a lot of time educating these guys on stuff that you would think they knew about the Jewish roots and the Jewishness of our faith. And so if these older guys don't know it, I can assure you the rest of the church doesn't know it.
You know what?
So, go ahead.
Yeah, my thought, Tony, is yes and no. Yes, in terms of no question, there's some real blind spots. No question. Look, I think of things that I thought when I was first saved that there were significant blind spots, areas of complete ignorance in terms of Israel, in terms of promises to Israel, in terms of Jewish background to the New Testament, Jewishness of Jesus. And look, I run into Christians that are still surprised to really understand what it means that Jesus was a Jew. At the same time, so no question, I agree with you. At the same time, there are many within the body who are getting it. In other words, it might be that some who have just not been exposed to these things and are old school in that sense, and I don't mean that in a wrong way, but have just always heard it in a certain context, are not aware of a lot of teaching that's gone through the body. So there are many, many places I travel around the world, and especially in America, where things that were maybe new 10 or 20 years ago, everybody just takes for granted and recognizes as biblical and true. I'm not talking about external revelation. I'm talking about recovering simple truths of Scripture. So I do see restoration happening, but we do have to keep sharing the truth. So we just stay patiently at it, recognizing that all of us have blind spots, so we have to be lifetime learners as disciples.
Hey, thank you so much. I love your show, and keep it up.
All right, thanks for listening there in Georgia. 866-348-7884. Any Jewish related question you have. Scott, before we talk about you and Beth, Jew and Arab, married, and what that signifies, I want to read a report to you. I get an email sent to Nancy and me from Megan, our younger daughter who lives here with her husband and two kids in the Charlotte area. And it says, "Give me a break," 2 exclamation points. And she says, "Here's an interesting article, not the usual topic, but there's one line in here that is ridiculous." And then she says what it is. So I want to just read this article briefly. There are sex offenders, and this is a city in California, and they must not participate in Halloween. In other words, if people come to their door, they can't participate. They can't give treats to kids. Well, you understand that. Protect the children. And there's an attorney representing 5 Simi Valley sex offenders who sued the city over limits to their Halloween activities. And she's claiming the lawsuit will be the first of several she expects to file over such restrictions. And part of the law is this, that if you're a registered sex offender, and I know sometimes it's overblown. He was a 19-year-old guy with a 16-year-old girlfriend, and they went too far. And then she says, "Well, he pushed me too far," and now he's a sex offender. And you have the idea that he's a 40-year-old man going after 8-year-old kids. But obviously, we got to protect the kids at any cost. So sex offenders have to be identified in certain ways. So they have to have on their doors written in 1-inch letters, you know, that they will not be participating in Halloween. No trick or treat here. It doesn't say I'm a sex offender, just not participating. So the attorney is upset with that, and the requirement is particularly egregious. We consider that to be a violation of the U.S. Constitution. Are you ready? It's similar to Jews in Nazi Germany who had to wear the yellow star on their clothing.
Amazing.
Oh, gosh. Okay, Scott and Beth Volk, Jew and Arab. Has there ever been any tension, not between the two of you, but on family levels because of these things? And how do you see that as a picture of what God's calling you to do in ministry?
Well, thankfully, in our immediate families, there's been no tension at all. I just got back, actually, from spending an amazing number of days with Beth's mom and dad and brother and sisters, and we have just an amazing, amazing relationship. Yet, I was recounting with my mother-in-law how when we first got married, there were particular people on that side of the family that couldn't believe that Beth married a Jew. As a matter of fact, my uncle once called the house. We had a Jordanian gal living with us whose name was Rowan. My uncle called me back, and my uncle said, "You know, what kind of name is that?" And Rowan said, "It's an Arab name." So my uncle calls me on my cell phone and says, "What do you got an Arab living with you for?" It's like, I said, "Uncle Robert, my wife is Arab." And he said, "Oh, okay." But really, there's such a stigma between Arab and Jew and the sons of Ishmael and the sons of Isaac that for generations there's been a division. Thankfully, within our family, there's not. But as I was reading this year through the Bible, just a verse stuck out at me in the book of Genesis that I had never seen before. And it was after Abraham died, Genesis 25:9, it says, "Then his sons, Isaac and Ishmael buried him at the cave of Machpelah. And I bet I've read that 100 times, but I thought to myself, isn't that interesting? Isaac and Ishmael, after Ishmael was sent away, Isaac and Ishmael burying Abraham together. And something was just revived inside of me that there's some kind of call that we've yet to see come to fruition where Arab and Jew are coming together, not just Gentile and Jew, although I believe that is a picture of one new man, but Arab and Jew, you can't think of two things that might be more on opposite ends of the spectrum coming together. God's blessed me with an amazing wife. My prayer is that we will see, before the Lord comes back, we will see Arab and Jew coming together and really being a representation of one new man.
Awesome. I believe God will do it. And you guys are great examples. Back with more, Scott Volk.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I've got some very, very important issues to discuss with you in these last 10 minutes with my guest and close friend, ministry colleague, Scott Volk. Before I do that, let me mention an important resource that we have for you today. The first hour of broadcasting, I interviewed Porter Speakman, who produced the DVD With God on Our Side. I had branded it an anti-Semitic hit piece. I was very upset with it. He was not able to join me on the air previously. We had dinner together. In fact, Scott was the one that set that up. But Porter was very happy to, very humble, said, I want to learn from you. I said, I want to learn from you to him. We had cordial dialogue, and I said, come on the air with me. We can discuss some differences, but let's hit on areas of commonality. We did that. It's an important interview. I never took back a word I said. He never took back a word he said in terms of our differences, which means that our areas of commonality and our desires to dialogue can set an example of what we have to do to work through differences and to learn from each other. You can get the CD of the entire first hour, plus my two-hour DVD lecture from the University of South Florida earlier this year, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? It's with PowerPoint, graphics, it's effective, it's clear, it's eye-opening. And then I do about 45 minutes of Q&A, so it's a two-hour DVD. Together, both postage paid $15. I don't know how much we've cut the price to do that, but $15 postage paid for the two-hour DVD, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? Plus the CD of my interview with Porter Speakman. Call the order 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. You can't go to the website for this. You have to call in 1-800-278-9978. And whatever you can do to hold my hands up as we reach out to the lost sheep of the House of Israel through this ministry, I would greatly appreciate that. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. All right, Scott, we're talking about funds right now, encouraging people to get behind what I'm doing in Jewish ministry. You are very sensitive to the fundraising issue when it comes to funds raised for Israel. And you are helping to funnel funds to needs among Messianic Jewish believers and others. What is your concern and what is your message to American Christians about giving towards Israel?
Well, I was blown away to understand that many organizations that are raising money for Israel.
Christian organizations
and non-Christian organizations that are raising money for Israel actually are raising between $70 and $100 million from Christian people in America.
So you're saying even organizations that are, say, Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein, he's not a Christian, but he's on Christian TV.
And
it's Christians, evangelical Christians, giving the bulk of this money.
I actually have cried watching his infomercials because I've been so moved by what he's doing. I mean, he's doing an amazing work, but the church is giving money to organizations that are that organization is actually opposed to Messianic believers in the land. Or there are some Christian organizations that really feel like God has called them to raise money for Israel, but it's political Israel. And again,
And then some of it goes to like an Orthodox Jewish orphanage. God cares for those kids.
He absolutely
does. But they will not be taught about Jesus.
No, they won't be taught about Jesus. And actually, some of those organizations would rather see the Messianic believers out of the land. On my very, very first trip to Israel, the Lord spoke to me in an underprivileged children's home in Tiberias and told me that I was going to be a conduit of funds for the poor and needy in the land, both Arab and Jew. And one of the things that my organization, Hanani International Ministries, does is it funnels funds to believers in the land, both Arab and Jew. And it has been such a joy to see the faces of people as we've been able to deliver money from American believers into the hands of people both in Bethlehem and in Jerusalem. It's quite a remarkable, wonderful privilege.
So you're giving, channeling funds, say, to needy Arabs or Palestinians, as they identify, in Bethlehem, and they know you're a Jewish believer in
Jesus.
They
know I'm a Jewish believer. As a matter of fact, on my last trip when I was there with a very major Arab leader, I was introduced as the one who gave the gift to this particular organization. That's how much it meant to them. And the fact that I'm Jewish and doing it really blew them away. So I'm really excited about that and believe that that could even be one of the things that brings Arab and Jew together.
And how do the Jewish believers feel about you giving some funds to needy Arabs?
Well, what really blesses me is those very same Jewish believers are giving to needy Arabs also. So they are all for it. The believers that I deal with in Israel want to see the Arab believers in the land blessed. So I get no opposition from them whatsoever.
It's just so important to hear that God's called us to be peacemakers. We can hold to our convictions, have our stands, but you've emulated that. Now, I noticed, bro, that I've referred to you a bunch of times as a close friend and ministry colleague. I haven't heard like anything from your end.
Well, let me just say to all of your listeners that I am so grateful, not only for being able to be on the show today, but for the years that you've poured into me. And yes, I reflect and give back to you the very things that you've given back to me. I'm so appreciative of our relationship. And especially now as I'm dealing with all of these new things in my life, I can't think of a better person to be around than you. Did I say that well enough for your listening audience?
I just wanted you to say that I'm your friend, that's all. Hey, listen, on the flip side, I've learned from you how to be nice over these years.
Yes.
You know, many times I would come away as the hero. I care about people. I do. But sometimes I don't recognize a need as carefully. And when we were together in Pensacola and Scott was my assistant way back when, we'd be walking down the hallway and you'd remind me, hey, so-and-so's uncle is in the hospital and they're a little down. And because I didn't even know it. I was just walking right by and I'd go in and I'd stop with them and I'd pray with them and they'd shoot me a note and thank me. And it was Scott who alerted me. Of course, I care, but he's been the one there with the pastoral burden all these years. So I'm learning from you, bro. Just I'm a slow learner, you know. So we got a minute and a half. You got a tour to Israel coming up?
I've got a tour to Israel coming up November 23rd through December 4th. I'm sorry, November 24th through December 3rd. We still have room, and I would love for anybody, both those who have a heart for Israel and those who are really asking the Lord to deepen their heart. It's an amazing, amazing opportunity to visit not only the major sites in Israel, but also to get firsthand experience with both Arab and Jewish believers on the land. It's an amazingly remarkable trip.
And I don't know, honestly, anyone that's doing what you're doing with this trip and with the funds like this. There are many good tours, but this is really unique. So here's where you go, scottvolk.com. That's V-O-L-K, like Volkswagen.
Like Volkswagen.
Scott Volk, scottvolk.com, or Hanani Ministries. How do you spell Hanani, Scott?
Hanani, Hineni-ministries.org.
You know, it just brings me joy when I hear you talk about your ministry, Hanani International Ministries. Friends, God's raised Scott up at a critical time and world in Jewish history, and I'm thrilled to be side by side with him. So go to scottvolk.com, find out about his next tour to Israel, or hanani-ministries.org. And we're talking about maybe doing a tour together next year. All right, friends, my bottom line today, if you have the heart of God, you have a heart for Jew and Arab alike. If you have the heart of God, you have a heart that longs to see Israel saved and longs to see God's promises to the Arab world fulfilled. If you have the heart of God, you long to see the blood of Jesus touch every inhabitant of the human race.